All right, last time we started discussing Tefillah Kelim, and Mr. Shem, tonight, time permitting, we'll get through the primary halachas of Tefillah Kelim. Just to quickly review the topics we covered and the topics we have yet to cover, we covered the source of Tefillah Kelim, which is based on the Pesukim by the Klei Midyan, where the Torah says an extra word, Yitzhaher, and teaches us, therefore, that in addition to the kashering Kelim that they had to do after the Muhammad, they also had to do some additional form of Kara, which was the Tefillah Kelim. We discussed that there's a machlokas for the Tefillah Kelim to arise with the Rabbanan. Generally, we assume for most for metal Kelim, it is the Oraisa. And we discussed possible Nachminas, whether it's the Oraisa with the Rabbanan. We pointed out the famous passage in the Yerushalmi that understands Tefillah Kelim as being a sort of gayless for the Kli, bringing the Kli into Kiddushas Yisrael, and possible Nachminas in that understanding of Tefillah Kelim. Then we covered the general topic of using utensils that were not Tovel for whatever reason. So to use your own utensils before Tevila, if you didn't Tovel them, that's absolutely out there. That's important. You should not even use it once is out there. When borrowing Kelim that are not Tovel, so that there was a little more room to play with. When it's borrowing from a non-Jew, and you're using a non-Jew's Kelim, so then it seems Pashut that it's Mutter, because it's not Chayav in Tevila. Like you said, you go to a restaurant owned by a non-Jew, go to a restaurant, he didn't have to be Tovel with Kelim. That's perfectly fine. Borrowing from a Jew is a little more problematic, and Moshe had that great Kiddush that when you're eating a Tzavutzat and you're pushing that they weren't told, they didn't talk about Kalim, that those Kalim that aren't necessary for eating, meaning they're nice to have, but you would be able to eat just fine without them, like a plate. You can eat, if the food was on the table, the food would take the tray, then it wouldn't be that much more difficult to eat the food. You were allowed to eat some, even though you know the guy didn't tell them. But a bowl, which obviously the soup wouldn't be too easy to eat without the bowl, so that you can't get away without the field. Kalem, we pointed out that while it's a great finish and it's a nice finish, it doesn't really fit, it doesn't help us so much, because a fork and a knife are still essential. So there's going to be very limited circumstances where that kula is going to help us. So they just have a greater kula where he felt that when you eat at someone's house, you're not a shoal at all. A shoal, someone who's a borrower, would not be allowed to eat from kelim that weren't told of. But he thinks when you're at someone's house, you have a different halakha than a shoal. A shoal is someone who, if you break to the tzayis, pay. You're at someone's house, you break his glass, they're not sending you any bills. So he thinks in such a case, you would. He thinks in such a case that they wouldn't be kind in a field of Kelim. And then we discuss the perhaps the most important topic, and that is the types of utensils that are kind in Tevila, and those that are not kind in Tevila. Pointed out the great misconception that people think that glass you don't make a bracha on, the glass you do make a bracha on Tevila Kelim, it's kind, just that, it's kind of Midrabanan, but we are in the practice of following the Gemara Masechta Shabbos. Where it talks about making bracha for mitzvot rabbanan, right? So we have a prophet that tells us we make bracha for mitzvot rabbanan, so we make a bracha on tefillah of glass. He pointed out that plastic, some folks who wanted to compare it to glass, generally were making with plastic. China were generally making with Corel, Corningware is a suffix, maybe a little closer to glass, some folks from Amakler, others are making with that, certainly not to make a bracha on these things. And disposable utensils, we are pointed out that Rav Moshe had a kula, that disposable utensils are, although they are called kelim, that since they're not mitzvah kula, he thought that they do not require tefillah kelim, right? So you have aluminum pans, I mean disposable utensils, we can get into the topic of disposable utensils that aren't really disposable utensils, meaning an aluminum pan is a disposable utensil because after you use it once, it's disgusting. You can't really use it a second time, and if you can't use it a second time, you can't use it a third time. But like a Snapple bottle is the classic example of a disposable utensil that's not really disposable, meaning it's disposable because we're in a very affluent society that can take glass, perfectly good glass jars, and after one use, throw it in the garbage. But why is a Snapple bottle, you know, in theory, why is it any different than a glass pitcher that I have, or a glass that I have? But it does require steel assembly. You buy a cheap glass that breaks in 2 seconds, and that requires steel assembly, so that's a different issue. When we talk about disposable last week, we were discussing really disposable things, things that can't be reused. There are folks, and I failed to mention that, if I'm not mistaken, I think Rav Schachter, I don't know, I didn't hear it from his mouth, but people have told me that Rav Schachter holds And even aluminum pans, if you can use them more than once, you can use them two or three times, and that even they would require tefillah. Someone told me the Rebbe doesn't hold that way, but the Rebbe does hold that way. So I don't know what to make of that. Then the last thing we discussed is electric utensils, and we had all the different shittos, the huge chiddush of the Chassidus Yaakov, that it's considered mechubar lekarka because the only way it works is when it's plugged in. Rav Moshe felt that you can view the electric part and the rest of it as two different kelim, and you can total the rest of it without putting the electric part in, which for most utensils doesn't really work because there's no way you're going to get the part that holds the food without putting the electric part in. But if you were to have such a plea that you were able to do that, Rav Moshe would hold that even though they're connected, you're allowed to do that. And Rav Shlomo Zalman suggested that, again, a Jewish electrician to take it apart and put it back together, and that way it's a Jewish plea and doesn't require tefillah. That was his eitzah, it was a good eitzah. I mentioned the post-eitzah in Karen Biavna trained himself, or got training from somebody to do that, to do just that to a sandwich maker. So all the Americans brought the sandwich makers, brought it to him, and everyone was wondering what he did, how, you know, people thought that he told what they're doing for them, but that's not what he did. He took it apart in a way that I would not have been able to, well, that's what I was going to say, a normal person would not have been able to take it apart, and he put it back together and he reassembled it. So that makes it a Jewish plea. That was a Shlomo Zalman's class. It's a good idea if you can find someone who's capable of doing that. And most folks can say that you just total the electric plea and leave it that way and just let it dry out for a few days and everything will be fine and it's no problem. Again, like I said, for most folks can that work. I did it and it didn't work, so you know, you at your own risk, you can do that, you can try that. Now tonight, I want to spend a good portion of the shiur discussing two words that are crucial in Tefillas Kelim. And we alluded to last week, and these are the words Klei Seuda. I don't know how much we have a chance to do inside tonight, because I really want to finish up all of the Tefillas Kelim tonight, but we'll see. A little inside, a little outside. The primary sugya of Tefillas Kelim, the sugya of Tefillas Kelim, the Hogar that I inhale, has an unbelievable Hava Amina. There's a Hava Amina in the Gemara that if a person has a plea, that they're not going to use to eat. They're just going to use it for, a baseball bat, something like that. A plea that they're going to use for something nothing to do with eating, that maybe should require tefillah kelim. But the Gemara says, no, only klei seuda requires tefillah kelim. That doesn't sound like a very big kiddush. But there, once we give that term, klei seuda, and we give it a definition, a working definition, we're then going to see that there's so many halachos that can be learned from there that are very much nogel lemaisa. So first, in terms of defining klei seuda, the Shulchan Aruch seems to say that if a kli was made to be used during a meal, and then you decide to use it for something else, such a kli does not require tefillah. Let's say you decide that your child needs a drum set, and it's cheaper to buy spoons to have him use as a drumstick than to buy the drumstick. So you buy these spoons that were meant to be used as place to Uda, but you're not using them as place to Uda. You have a plan on using them as place to Uda. You buy two cake spoons from a guy or something, you never plan on using them as place to Uda. So that's perfectly fine, doesn't require tefillah. Now with the Shulchan Aruch, so that's obvious. Most of us probably could have figured that out on our own. What's not as clear in Shulchan Aruch is if you plan on using it for klei seuda, meaning you bought the spoon and you're going to use the spoon, but right now, in the meantime, you want to use it for something else. And in the meantime, you know, like I was changing license plates on a car we just got before, changing from putting on the New York plate, and we didn't have I couldn't find any screwdrivers because I always lose these things. So I was looking for anything I could possibly find that had a flat metal edge that I could use to, I thought about a spoon. Didn't fit exactly. So, if I had just purchased that spoon and I hadn't been told that spoon yet, would I be allowed to use it for this for some other use before actually bringing it to the... So that Shulchan Aruch is not clear about, and the post can debate that issue. Also, that the flip side of this issue is, what if you have a kli that was not made for a kli seuda? A pocket knife. I know a pocket knife is made for, but they make a cut loaves or whatever, a Boy Scout knife. These things that are not made for a klei seuda, and then you happen to be somewhere where, at least temporarily, you want to use it for a klei seuda. You want to cut an apple or something, and you happen to have the only knife you have on you is your pocket knife. Can you use it temporarily pray not spaces. It's really two sides of the same issue. It may or may not depend on each other, this shayla. Certainly, if I decide, if I buy something that's not meant as a place to, then I decide I'm always going to use it as a place to, but then certainly I have to tell them. That there's no question about. Especially if I want to use it once as a place to, I'm not always going to use it as a place to, though. So that's a debatable point. There's a passage in the Shas where he seems to indicate something, but folks can debate what he's even saying about this topic. So all of these things are in the post, and the post was certainly, if possible, to try to be machmir and to tovel these things. Now, by being machmir, that means toveling without a bracha. So again, if it's something that was made for a clay suda and you're not using it for a clay suda ever, you don't have to tovel it. If you can use it even once as a clay suda, probably then it's machlokes haposkim, so it's a real shas of tzak yish under the smoke, but ideally you should tovel it. Certainly if you're always going to use it for a clay suda, obviously then you tovel it. And if it's something that wasn't made for a clay suda, if you're going to always use it for a clay suda, tovel it. If you're not always going to use it for a clay suda, you only need to use it once, something like that. So like I said, so that's machlokes haposkim and yish under the smoke, but ideally to try to be machmi. Now that's the less practical aspect. Now, the more practical aspect of clay suda, Shulchan Aruch has a halacha in Sif Dalet that probably is related to the concept of clay suda. Shulchan Aruch is looking at source number four, tripidish, I think it means tripod, shashosim aleim tevero, that you put a tevero on top of, you put a pot on top of a tripod, so you don't actually put the food on top of it, you put the pot on top of it, einam teunos tevila, doesn't require tevila. However, he says, this other type of thing that you do put the food directly on top of does require tefillah. So here you see that there is this idea that only kelim that touch food require tefillah. If the kli, even if it's used in food preparation, but the kli doesn't actually touch food, it's not going to require tefillah. A lot of nafkamina is the ma'aseh for this, right? You have the grates on your stovetop do not require tefillah. No one puts food directly on the stovetop grate. Microwave plate, so that's already icky. Some people in yeshiva dorms, it does require tefillah because it was not that uncommon for people to put food directly on the microwave plate. But in most homes, probably wouldn't require food if there's a glass plate in the microwave, right? So because if you don't put food directly on there, everything goes in the plate first, then it would not require tefillah. You have oven racks also. So oven racks generally, you don't put food directly on the oven rack. Generally, you always put everything in some sort of pot. Now, what I'm specific about is sometimes you might put something in the oven rack with a piece of foil underneath it, which isn't really a clue. But that may have, that I'm not really sure. I don't know if people do that so often or whatever. Normally, they have cookie sheets for that. So I don't know. That I'm a little specific. But generally, we assume, I think, most folks assume oven racks don't require tefillah. A corkscrew doesn't require tefillah, because a corkscrew, again, never comes in contact with the food. It only comes in contact with the cork. Can opener also. I mean, a can opener, it touches some of the juice, but that's purely incidental. It's not meant to touch the juice. It's meant to open the can. Also doesn't require tefillah. You see, sometimes, it's frustrating. You're at a Kali Mikra, and you're online, and there are a lot of people there, and 90% of the things are told them don't require tefillah. You just, want to say, read this line. Right, but so these types of things don't require tefillah. I heard that Kavlovsky was talking with someone, asked him about a nutcracker. I don't think most people don't really use nutcrackers. They just find nuts that are shelled already. But whatever, if you have a nutcracker, so does that require tefillah? So don't, they're gish loving, because it touches the shell of the food. So is the shell of the food called that it touches the food, or is that called like a package that it doesn't touch the food at all? In the safer field of killing is not clear, but one could certainly argue that there's room to be made with a nutcracker. There's a safer, the encyclopedia on all the fields of killing. It's a whole thick book, and the name of the safer is originally titled Vilas Case. Not the most organized of any safer in the world, but it has everything in there. Now, if you, someone asked last week, and Michal asked last week, if, let's say, you haven't gotten a chance to go to the Kali Mikveh, this happens all the time, someone didn't get a chance to go to the Kali Mikveh yet, they want to use the Kli, can they just put a napkin in the Kli, so they're not going to, we know you're not allowed to use it once, even once, that's a misconception, even once you're not allowed to use it after it's too. So you put a napkin down and use it that way, this way it's not touching the food, and we said the whole din is that it has to be touching the food. So that's a post we're talking about. The Sefer Tefillos Kelim points out that unless the kli is made to not touch food, it requires tefillah. Meaning if the tree was made to come in direct contact with food, and it will be used that way, it's not always going to be used with a napkin in between, so then it's going to require tefillah. It's only if it's always going to be used with a napkin in between. And sometimes people have, I was thinking about this, people have silver, like challah trays. Not the cutting board, but they have like trays that they'll hand out the challah in, and they'll always put a napkin inside, because Chashom Krem should get in the silver, which it always does anyway, but people will do that sometimes. Remember, if you're always masked that, you're always going to put that napkin inside. So maybe then it wouldn't require tefila, right? And certainly maybe not with the bracha. Maybe there's what the chashish over there not to do tefila. The practical example of this is, I don't even know if it's practical anymore. I remember growing up, whenever I'd go to Eretz Yisrael, so they used to have, they sold milk in bags as opposed to in cartons. Makes a lot of sense. They sold the smelliest everything possible. Whatever. So they sold milk, and they always cut the hole the wrong size. But anyway, that's what it is. Sold milk in bags, and how do you keep a bag of milk? You have this little container. They always put the bag of milk. The container was never meant to hold the milk, right? It was meant to hold the bag of milk inside of it. So that's what Shlomo Zalman Rav says. That doesn't require to do this. Normally it's plastic anyway, so it wouldn't require to do this. But if you have a fancier one, it's made of metal or something like that, that wouldn't require to do this. It's never meant to actually touch the food itself. Now, moving along, in terms of clay se'uda, generally, clay se'uda, in order to be chayiv in tefillah, has to be one of two, it has to fit into one of two categories in order to really be considered clay se'uda. One is something that you use during the meal to eat, and another is something that you use in preparation of a meal. Like the different parts of a food processor and things like that, where you're using in preparation of the meal, right, comes in direct contact with the food, and you're using them for the bowl, let's say, of the mixer, right, the metal bowl of the mixer, so the chora, that's used in food preparation, right, and that probably would require to be, if you have a cutting board, let's say a cutting board, things like that, or knives that you only use to cut before you're eating, things like that those would require tefillah, because it is called clay se'uda, because it's used in the preparation of the se'uda. There is an interesting machlokas in Shulchan Aruch, which one would think is not so nogeh l'maisa, but actually is very much nogeh l'maisa. If you look, Shulchan Aruch in its hay, it is all in Yerdeh, so you put kaf, in source number 7 over there on the sheet, the Shulchan Aruch writes, sakin shel shchita, a shchita knife. Was there required tefillah? So Shulchan Aruch said, Yesh Misha Omer, She'enu Tzarech Tefillah. There are those who say you don't have to tovel a shchita knife. And the Ramah says, Yesh Chokin, and others disagree, and therefore, the tovel of love bracha. Better to be tovel the shchita knife without a bracha. Now, what are we saying over here? Is this shchita knife, I mean, how do we apply this halacha by a shchita knife that we're mocking it to tovel the shchita knife without a bracha? How do we apply it to other kelim? Meaning, what is different about a shchita knife than any other thing that's used in the preparation of food? Right? So there are two fundamental, there's one or two fundamental differences that can be drawn between a shchita knife and, let's say, the food processor. Right? The food processor is only used in preparation of food. It's not used in the food itself. In the eating of the food itself, in the meal itself, the shchita knife also is used in the preparation of food. So one may argue, though, that by shchita knife there's more reason to say it doesn't need tefillah, because it's very preliminary preparation. Meaning, by the time you're done checking the animal, you're not even close to being ready to eat it. You have a lot more to do with it before you can eat the animal. So some poskim, the Shach writes that, the Tadig leaves, some of the notes that came from the Shach assume that the shchita knife does not require tefillah with the bracha, only because it's such a preliminary preparation. It's something that any food, any utensil, that when the utensil is done with the food can now be eaten, would require tefillah with the bracha. So it will come out, if that's the rule, and that is generally what the folks can assume, the rule is, it will come out that, let's say, a potato peeler. So by the time you're done peeling the potato's still not edible, because it's raw still. You can't eat the potato the way it is, even when you're done peeling the potato. So many folks can point out that a potato peeler probably does not, certainly not with a bracha, probably does not require tefillah. And maybe even not require tefillah at all, there's room to be naked. But what people didn't realize at first when folks were saying that by potato peeler you can be naked, is how caterpillars are actually used in the kitchen. Never been in a real kitchen where food is being prepared. A caterpillar, about 50% of the time is used for a potato, and the other 50% of the time is used for cucumbers and carrots and all types of things that can be eaten raw the way they are when you're done peeling. So practically speaking, caterpillars deal with a bracha, because unless you have, you're very massive, you can only use your potato peeler with only potatoes and nothing else, which I don't think people generally are. The Shach has an interesting ha'arza. The Shach is cutting it out. Look at source number 8. He says that there is something else about the Shkita knife that maybe makes the Shkita knife more calmer than other food preparation utensils. He writes, Kasha, to the issue of a heter problem, chesim days, dima habrazeh and masakim shal shkita, shemachshitim bo, the insar of tefillah. I mean, he quotes the issue of a heter compared a certain type of flea, which was used in food preparation, to a sakim shal shkita. And he says, the insar of tefillah, the kibbut the adar shem masakim of tzarek hazayim tzitun after. Any time the food is going to need something else still to do, so it's not going to require tefillah. It says the in cane, but if that's the case, keeping the customer wrapped with the second shall shkita yeshuas no gula bracha, who has the abrazelim. So it's come out that if the shkita knife, you do tefillah without a bracha, then you do tefillah without a bracha on anything that's not the final utensil before it's edible. However, he says, the nearer the tefillah rav, the abrazelim gari tfei. So it could be that even though a shkita knife would require tefillah without a bracha, other utensils that are used in food preparation that do not finish the job for you would not even require tefillah even without a bracha. Why not? Why would it require tefillah at all? She'i efsha l'shamsha l'ma'achal acher. It's something that the shkita knife has over, let's say, a food processor. A shkita knife, theoretically, if you have nothing else around the house, right, and you have the shkita knives that are around the house, either your shofet or your father's shofet, whatever, and you have the shkita knives, theoretically you can cut your steak with the shkita knife also. A shkita knife can be used, especially if your chef's gasses and that, like that, it may not be the most convenient, but your chef's chicken, so it's a little knife. You can certainly use it. You wouldn't want to, because if you've ever met a shofet, they're very, very mocking about their shkita knives. No one touches their shkita knives because it is, and rightfully so, they're a little nick and they're going to be making traces left and right. So they have to be very careful about their shkita knives. But theoretically, if a person wants to use a shkita knife for a seuda, they technically could do so. So that's why the Shach says maybe the shkita knife requires tevila without a bracha, but something that could not be used on a finished product, and is not used on a finished product, meaning by the time it's done, it's still not a finished product, that would not require tevila. So I was thinking about that with the blades of the food processor. Folks can generally assume they do require tevila, but generally when you, it depends what you use a food processor for. I mean, if you're putting in raw materials there and it's not necessarily food that you would eat as is, so maybe it wouldn't require. Normally you bake it after it goes in the, I've limited experience in the kitchen, but, I don't know, I have to use a shared woman and find out. But I guess maybe if you put like apples in there and things like that you could eat right away. So maybe that's why it would require tefillah. So again, involved in the preparation of food, as long as it's edible right away, it requires tefillah. Now the big chiddush, Rav Moshe had so many unbelievable chiddushim when it came to tefillah's kavanim. Rav Moshe was asked about a toaster. And this is a huge chiddush, Rav Moshe said. Rav Moshe, first number 9 in Yigush Moshe, writes, the davar, and you can sit there trying to read that word for a while, a toaster, it's in that second paragraph, the davar a toaster, when it comes to toveling a toaster, lania zaiti, ein tzar tefillah, you don't have to do tefillah. Why? Gari isa, bavo dzar dachay nehem, bay is the clay, su'uda, nur de parsha, that you only have to do tefillah on clay su'uda, right, that's what we said is our topic, but with clay su'uda, nefshu dvarim, shu tzorach the su'uda, mitzad hafishol, clay su'uda means, those utensils that are necessary to prepare a proper meal, even if they're not going to be brought to the table themselves. Right? That was one type of clay suda. There's the kalim that are used in preparation of a suda. And also, and the other type of clay suda is those that are actually used during the meal. Right? So which type of place is a toaster? So you say, well, certainly not brought to the table, but it's the first type of place is up. It's the type of place that's used to prepare food for a meal. Says Rav Moshe, no, avala toaster, shemi yakshin sham pas afoy, the toast. You take fully edible, perfectly good bread, and you just dry it in the toaster. You just dry it a little more. V'roi lachil kalavim, the bread was perfectly edible for everyone beforehand. Ein mahashivo tzarechasu'udo. You can't say that this kli was used for something that was necessary for the su'uda. It wasn't at all necessary for the su'uda. You could have eaten the bread the way it was. I mean, when it comes to the food processor, so yeah, I could have eaten the apples before they were sliced and baked, but it's a completely different thing. It's a completely different entity now. It wouldn't have been an enjoyable su'uda if I was eating apples. It's an enjoyable su'uda when I'm eating an apple kugel. Right? It's a completely different thing. But by the toaster, what is it? Does it really make that much of a difference if I spread butter on my bread or I spread butter on my toast? It doesn't make any difference. So it's not necessary for the su'uda. So she'esh rokim miyaveh shapas, shenon mu kitas yosef. Some people like it a little more this way. Makashol chasol klum lapas gam beloza. Since the bread isn't missing anything without it, it doesn't seem to Rav Moshe that this would be called a kli that would require tevilah. So if we were to stop reading the tshuva right there, and we need to accept this, a lot of folks can reject this. First of all, for toasters, it's not really an okay so much, because most toasters people have aren't just to make toast. They make other things, and then most people have toaster ovens. Oh, not just toaster. Well, the toaster he's talking about is the two things of bread that pops up, right? So it's not that common. You'll find that's not a very common kitchen appliance to pick up steak. You can get a toaster oven that will do the same trick, and will do a million other things for you also. So the toaster oven is certainly the tray, well, it depends. If you put things directly on the tray, which people do in the toaster oven, so the tray would require tefillah, right? Because that even Rav Moshe would agree would require tefillah. Where Rav Moshe does discuss, but at this point in the tshuva, if you were stuck reading here, where if you were to take this to its logical conclusion, as Rabbi Sabalovsky said, he brought it up with Rabbi Willard, and he said, a tea kettle, a hot water urn, and what does it do? It takes water and it makes it hot water. It doesn't really do that much. So that would be a gavaldic kula for a hot water urn, right? That's the three arguments, because speaking in the mitzvah, right? So that would be an unbelievable kula. Problem is, and he said, it was interesting to hear Rabbi Sabalovsky obviously hadn't looked over the tshuva before he gave the shiur that I was listening to, and he said he was discussing with Rabbi Willard, and Rabbi Willard was not necessarily holding the topic, but Rabbi Willard said, no, it can't be. For a tea kettle hot water, it has to be that required. It can't be that this kula, that Rav Moshe would apply this kula. When it goes from cold water to hot water, it's a whole different test, it's completely new entity, it can't be that this kula would apply. It has to be, if you look in the tshuva itself, Rav Moshe, in that same paragraph, the stuff is hot water. And he says, something that's used to make water hot, that's completely something new. That's not like the difference between bread and toast. The difference between bread and toast he considers minor. The difference between cold water and hot water he considers major. I don't know. Right, you want for Shabbos, obviously.
It's not even judged.
Right. That's what Rabbi Sabalovsky was saying, that Rabbi Willard was thinking. That was a long question. And we were saying just in terms of for Shabbos, it's a completely different entity. It has to be that we consider this a completely different entity.
Like, that's the property also. Like, if you can't make the tea bag, it won't make the thing. Tea is cold water.
Right, so it's able to accomplish all new tasks. As opposed to the toast. Okay. Let's prep the food. So
what else on the toast if you want to take it that way?
yeah, but you could spread it, right? Anyway, so that's Rav Moshe's Kiddush. Now, to perhaps use this if you actually have a toaster, so even though people didn't like Rav Moshe's Kiddush so much, there's lots to be so much fun if you have a toaster. A sandwich maker, though, I think, is a nogeya, the mitzvah, case of where Rav Moshe's truth is nogeya. No? Rav Moshe said that any time it's not doing anything that different to it. So maybe sandwich maker, I don't know, it's kind of how you define the difference. What does sandwich maker do? It just melts the cheese and toasts the bread. Right? But otherwise it's not, because that's what you use it for, right? Otherwise it doesn't really do much, meaning it's the same cheese, it's just softer, and the same bread, just harder. Right? I mean, so that's, unless you want to say no, that a grilled cheese is a different chesed than an American cheese sandwich. Right? But maybe there's room to be made. Sandwich maker is impossible to, I mean, unless you trust the people who say that let it dry out and it'll be fine. It's impossible to tumble the sandwich bread without putting the electric part in. Most of the other kula of only tumbling the part that touches the food, it's impossible to because it doesn't open flat. If it opens flat, it happens to me. If the sandwich bread were to open at 180 degrees, according to Moshe, you'd be able to put in only the surface of it that touches the food into the mikvah and leave the rest out of the mikvah. Because that was Rav Moshe's finish about electric appliances, that you consider them two different kelim. But they don't open flat. They only open up to 110 degrees, 120 degrees. They don't open up flat. So it's impossible to stick it in without sticking the electric in. So maybe if you combine the Chalkes Yaakov's Mechubal Karka and Rav Moshe's what's the difference between dry bread and not so dry bread, and you combine all these things together, so then maybe that you have a kula to not tovel a sandwich maker, more so than other kelim.
If you assume it's all going to get broken, then there's no other way of going about being tovel, because then there's just other things toveling it?
Yeah, so this is a tricky thing, because I couldn't find anyone who wrote that. As far as I know, the post can assume if you can't tovel it, you can't use it. Meaning it's, you have a mitzvah to use kelim, you can't tovel, you can't use it. I had, after I ruined the first expensive version, I bought another one. Stupidly, I bought another one before, and then I asked the question, what do I do now? I already ruined one, so I asked I don't know if it must be quoted, so I asked a prominent Talmud on what to do, and he said, there's no way to do it, then you can use it. So I don't know where he got it from, I haven't found it in any state first, but I received that stock from someone I respect very much, so see what that as you may. I'm the only person, again, I'm the only person I know of that tried tevila on one of these things and it broke. It could be that it was broken before, and I didn't try it beforehand. It could be that I got a bad one for that. I couldn't go back to the company and tell them, what did you do with it? Well, all I did, the sign that says don't dip it into, don't immerse in water. So all I did is I immersed all in water. I obviously couldn't do that. I was once at a cable mix and a guy was coming in and he comes in with this thing, with the hot water, and then it was Friday afternoon, and he goes, people ask questions in the cable mix all the time to anybody who was there. I didn't look like a rabbi, I still don't look like a rabbi. And he said, do you know the after total of this? And I said, I won't get in broke, but I told him, I said, supposed to say, people say and have suggested that you probably just leave it for a few days and it'll be okay. Otherwise, you can get electrocuted or something. You don't want to plug it in, in a few hours. He's like, Shabbos this week, I only have a few hours. So I said, you're crazy. You can't stick it in the room. Who's going to plug it in? I will. And he probably will. I don't know what happened. This is the Shalom Bayit. Anyway, so that's the next topic, but also a category that was a little unclear to me is storage canning. So storage canning, let's say you keep your flour in, you keep your sugar in. You bring it to the table and take directly the flour and the sugar from there, but that's where you keep things in. So does that require tevila? I think usually it's plastic, but yeah, fancy ones, metal ones. Right? So does that require tevila? So on the one hand you say, well, why not? But on the other hand, if the definition of klei suda is either something used in the preparation of food or something used at the suda, so this is neither. Right? So there are folks that say that storage kelim do not require tevila. The kelim are used specifically for storage. Certainly if it's used for storage and it never actually touches the food, let's say you have a thing where you keep all your tea bags. Some people have a metal can where they keep all their tea bags. That certainly doesn't require tevila because it doesn't even touch the actual tea. It only touches the bag that holds the tea leaves, and it's only for storage. So something like that would certainly not require tevila. But storage kelim itself is a little bit of a debate amongst the poskim. Some see no reason why it shouldn't, but others say it just doesn't fit into either one of the categories.
Yeah. Take it out of the bin. It's not ready.
Right, meaning that's
well,
the
other thing. I'm saying preparatory. Meaning it's so far from food. It's not like it's...
But it doesn't even aid in the preparation. It's just holding it until you're ready to start the preparation. Right, exactly. Preparatory would be okay.
Right.
Meaning it would require it to be there to use in preparation. But if it's planning to use in preparation, it's just, holding it until preparation. So there is room to argue that storage kelim do not require to be there. Now this leads us right into kelim that that you buy it that way. You buy the food, and it comes with a kli around it. You buy 16 ounces of snapple, and it comes with a very nice glass jar. You buy coffee, and it comes with a nice glass jar. Now it's mostly plastic, but let's say it comes with a nice glass jar. So what do you have to do? So over here you have postum range from one extreme to the other on this topic. Because in Ishtel, unbelievable chumrah, you buy a thing of coffee, a glass jar of coffee, you go home, you open it up, spill it out into a bag, take it to the mikvah, tumble it, dry it out, and put the coffee back in. You can't have it in your home holding the coffee if you have not been tumbled back clean. You can buy it. Once you buy it, though, get the food out of there, and you have to tumble it right away. That's the Chazon Ish Lakumah. Most obviously have not accepted the Chazon, at least in our side of the ocean, have not accepted the Chazon Ish Lakumah. So cans and glass, there may be room to be Mechali. Because, good, I mean, a can is metal, so you would think it should be even more so that it would require a student. So that's the difference. Now, when it comes to cans, generally, the way, most cans, when you open them, they're ruined. So since it's only a one-time use, so that, I don't know what Chazon Ish said about it. Yeah, well, that destroys it, right. Meaning, that's why some are made to open a soda can on Shabbos, but not a, not something like with a bottle cap that will lose their coffee or something. Shabbos gets a little more complicated. There are other issues with the soda can and cutting along the corporation. There are other issues, but yeah, but that's exactly the point. Meaning, when it comes to the Rav Shechter, for instance, says that soda cans don't require to be less caleb, but he thinks Snapple bottles do. But Rav Shechter is not as machmir as the Chazon Ish, meaning, whereas the Chazon Ish said, as soon as you buy it, empty it and total it, Rav Shechter said, no, you don't have to do that. Once you buy it like that, so you didn't put it in there, and right now it's just being used for storage. But the second you want to use it as a clay smudo, that's when there's a clean smudo. So Rav Shechter said, the way Snapple bottles are normally drunk, where people open it up and drink straight from the bottle, now I'm using it as a clay smudo. I'm eating from it. So that's what he said, that you should never use it to drink directly from the bottle. You should pour it into something else when you drink it, otherwise it would require through the skin. And certainly to reuse it would require through the skin as well. And that's why Shepherd is the second most machmir in terms of what I'm aware of regarding kalim that you buy with food in it. Then there are many folks who will say, you can eat from it, you can drink from it, it's only when you want to put stuff back in that you have a problem. So some folks either, and within that camp there are two shittos. Some say put things back in, meaning if you put the same contents that you took out back in, even that is no good. You wouldn't be able to, let's say you took out too much coffee and you realize you poured out too much. You wouldn't even be able to pour some of that back in. Others say no, that you can do, you just can't put in new food into the kli. Like a Snapple bottle, you see this again all the time. When you buy a Snapple bottle, so very often guys would pull up the Snapple bottles with water after they're done and leave them in the fridge to have some extra drink in the fridge where they make lemonade or iced tea or something in the Snapple bottle. So that, the postman say, that's problematic. That would require tequila. That's what many of the postmen say. There, the postmen come up with different kinds of tricks that you can do to avoid the tequila tefillah kalim. The Shvi'i Aish is quoted in the Sefer Tefillah Kalim on one of these starting in the Sefer HaKashra. It's a very nice Sefer. The one who once recommended to me, and I bought it. It's a fantastic Sefer. It's basically a summary of all the books of Kashra. So in that Sefer, the Philosopher Yaakov Weinberg said that maybe when you buy it, you should have kavana that you don't want to be kona the kli. You're only being kona the food and the kli is not, but you're not really making kidney on the kli, so the kli still belongs to a guy. So if you have such kavana, maybe you can get out of it. Different suggestions. Again, the biggest kiddush and the biggest kula belongs to Moshe Feinstein. But Moshe held the following chak when it comes to Snapple bottles or any type of kli that comes along with food in it. But Moshe said as follows. We're not going to have time to read it inside, but you may want to look at it on your own. It's in source number 11. But Moshe writes that when you, what happened? Right now, it's a wrapping around the food. He brings a raya from the Shnayas and the stuff that most of us never learned, that there's such a concept called kosko, something that's called just a packaging around the food that is not yet a kli. It only becomes a kli when you start using it as a kli. prior to that, it's considered just a wrapping around food. It's like the chrysalis, like a shell of a nut or an egg. It's something that's considered to be bottled to the food inside of it. Because that's the way the food comes. It comes in this packaging. So right now, when you buy it, certainly it's not yet a kli. When does it become a kli? The second you open it and start using it as a kli. That's when it becomes a kli. Right? And that's when it should be chayav mitzvah kli. The only thing is, who made it a kli? You're the one that opened it. You're Jewish. And if you made it a kli, and you're the Jew who made it a kli, so it's not chayav mitzvah kli. Only non-Jewish kli are chayav mitzvah kli. Meaning he holds that it's not called a kli until the Jew starts using it. Since you're a Jew that starts using it and makes it a kli, so it's not chayav mitzvah kli at all. So he held that all these things, apart from mitzvah kli, can even be reused, right? Very often. So well, that's all the problem in yeshivas with the IC and the different things that they use to fill up the glass sample bottles and the coffee jars. And sometimes you have in shuls where they make kiddush in shul or a dollar in shul. So very often they'll pour from the grape juice bottle, the glass grape juice bottle into the cup, and after the kiddush they'll fill from leftover, they'll pour it back into the grape juice bottle, or even at home. Right, to pour it back into the grape juice bottle. So according to many folks, that would be problematic. Right, if you're putting something back into the kli, now that would require some skin, but according to Moshe, no. Since it's only packaging to the kli, and you're the one that made the kli when you opened it, so that's what he was comfortable being made with it. Again, a lot of the folks who are not so thrilled with it, most people never think about it. Most people just, they buy and they use, and they don't think twice. But, thank God they have Rav Moshe to be some kind. I don't think most folks can agree with Rav Moshe on that, but those who do it, and who, certainly those who don't know better, have Rav Moshe to be some kind. And certainly, ideally, if you can, you should try to just be aware not to reuse these things. Again, the sample company, as soon as you can throw them at, you can throw them at. You don't have to reuse them. So why don't you reuse
them? The manufacturer is a Jew.
Right.
And he's filling it up with whatever it is that he puts in there. Like Kevin, grape juice. He buys his bottles, he doesn't buy it necessarily
from
his company.
Yeah, so the assumption is that if there was a guy anywhere along the line, it requires to do a kid. Right, that's the question. That's what the Shofar says. If a Jew buys a kli from a guy and then he sells it to another Jew, so the kli needs to be there. So the question is, who does it? So we're going to get into it in a second. Who would have to do the kli's kind of work? We'll be there in a minute. So utensils that are bought for business. The halakha is that if I buy a kli to use, and then I decide to lend it out to someone else, so I'm the first guy who bought it is the one that was really high in tefila, right, because I wanted to use it. I lent it to someone else before doubling it. Tefila has to be done. Right? It's a question of how tefila is going to get it. Tefila has to be done in it. Let's say I'm a caterer, or I own a restaurant, so I bought a lot of or I'm the kelim company. I bought a lot of kelim. I bought a lot of jars, and these are types of utensils that require tefila, but I don't plan on using them. I don't plan on using them for food, at least. They're not going to be my place to use. I'm not preparing any food for myself in it, nor am I bringing it to my table. I'm preparing it for business. I'm going to use it to serve other people. I'm going to use it to sell or to give to other people in the restaurant. So the Minchas Yitzchak has a Kiddush, and the Minchas Yitzchak says that in that case, the first guy who buys it, it's not chayav in tefila because it's not his place to use it. And the second guy who's using it is borrowing it from someone who's not chayav in tefila, but eating at a non-Jewish restaurant. Even though you would say, well, Jewish owned priest doesn't require tefila, but no, since the Jew who owns it is not using it as clay seuda, so maybe it does not require tefila because he's not using it as clay seuda, and therefore it's not my problem. I'm just borrowing it from someone who wasn't chayav in tefila in the first place, and then he's kelim. It's like borrowing it from a non-Jew. There are hashkafos that are sonic on it. There are hashkafos that allow caterers not to couple any kelim, and allow restaurants not to tovel anything. Generally, we assume, I think, that you do have to make sure that they tovel their kelim. I've had bad luck when I get a kelim. I've been to a kelim before there's a caterer there. So you come back in 3 hours because they have massive amounts of kelim, right? So most of the folks, I think, assume they do require food, but that's a possible finish, and maybe they would not. there is a discussion of Shurvat has, just to mention briefly, I want to get into the other halakos, I'll just mention the issue without it. So Shurvat discussed the utensils that you buy as a gift, you give as a gift to someone else. Right, so this could be problematic if you don't think the guy you're giving it to is going to be covered with kelim. Meaning, on the one hand, if I don't think he's going to be covered with kelim, so it took me there to give him a gift that's not covered, he'll say, okay, so let me cover it. But if I'm not chayiv in tefillah, then my tefillah doesn't work. Meaning, if I'm not chayiv in tefillah, so the kli, not me, the kli is a chayiv in tefillah until it gets into the hand of the guy who's going to use it as kli suga. So right now, it's not chayiv in tefillah, putting it to the mitzvah, what else? Like a guy toveling it and then selling it to me. Doesn't help when the guy toveled it. So that's where Shturmach has this stuff, like, what to do if you're buying a gift for somebody, and it happens more often than you think, because these kids, I don't know what they do in Central Avenue, but I don't know if candy stores that sell things, food, packaged in glass, and so sometimes it's plastic, it's wicker, but if it's in glass, which is sometimes the case, or metal, I don't know if they cover the candy, those candy stores. And if they do, I don't know if they have to. Meaning, it's not their candy stores, they're using it as packaging, like I said, that was the smart. Right? So very often you buy it for somebody, and there's very little, most people don't think of it. They get a glass dish with candy in it, they don't think of tefillah candy. They think of a nice gift that they got on Shabbos. So it's a big subject, what to do in that case. And the real thing to do is buy plastic or something else, because it's really a big subject. But there's no simple solution. The simple solution would be for you to have someone else decode it on behalf of the other person, and then it becomes theirs already, so it's you. Then you total it yourself, dry it out with the candy back in. That's not so simple though, it's a whole big vehicle already. Which anyway, you may need someone to decode it anyway, if you're kind of giving it on Shabbos. You know, if the Shabbos is just making it on Shabbos, to have someone decode it for the other guy is, if he was up, Muslim, Shalom, and Fana. But that, you know, that's a different topic. So it's not at all a simple matter. I keep on meaning to ask someone what the hashgacha on the candy store is good. Because I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what this what the
other thing is that in half a bottle. Because we think it's the first time. Most people throw it away after. If you want to use it a second time.
No, some people
use it
very
nice advice. If you want to use it a second time, like
the
half a bottle, then you go
in. Right, and economy. If you have it, then yeah, that's what I'm saying. You should be.
You're assuming people that use it a second time aren't total.
Right. Yeah. I don't think I'm off on that. I hope I'm off, but I don't think I'm so off.
That's something that they're very nice.
They're
colors.
Right, and people
reuse
them.
You don't think that
you
buy it. You don't think
that right,
exactly. Come empty. They don't think that there.
And people also assume I bought it in a Jewish store, so it must be Jewish, so I don't have to do it. Whatever the chesbonos are, or whether there's not chesbonos, it seems to be a problem. So certainly, if you're going to reuse one of those things, to double it, maybe even use it the first time, there's room to argue that you should double it, but certainly to reuse it to double it. It's just we only have that 10, 15 minutes, 12 minutes left. So just to get through the actual tefillah process. So preparing a kli for tefillah, there's a discussion, what was the original tefillah kelim that ever happened in the whole world? So it was in the Chumash, when they had these clay medium, they had non-kosher kelim. So the kelim didn't only require tefillah, it required kashering as well. The question is, if you have non-kosher kelim, which comes first, the tefillah or the kashering? This was a discussion in the Poskim. Tosfos points out that there's some Rishonim that held that if you kasher after the two, if you tovel when the kli is still trey, so it's tovel the sharet v'yadav. So I go into the mikvah holding a sharet in your hand, the tefillah doesn't work. There's Tosfos says, no, we're doing two completely different things. Tovel the sharet v'yadav means I'm trying to become tahor, but I'm holding tumah in my hand. Right? So it's exactly what I'm trying to get rid of, I still have in my hand. By tefillah doesn't get rid of the traces anyway. So it's not even double the sharet v'yadav. Tefillah gives it a certain sense of kedushas Yisrael, right? And the hagolah can get rid of the traces. Two different things. So Tosfos says, I don't think it's a problem to be tovel before you do the hagolah. Rosh Hashanah, however, holds it is a problem. What are they arguing about? So this is what Rabbi Sobolevsky suggested. They're arguing about what is the problem of tovel the sharet v'yadav. Is tovel the sharet v'yadav a problem that it's the tefillah is fine. Tefillah is perfect. Let's say I'm holding the sharet loosely. This morning's up. I'm holding it very loosely, so the water is able to get in all around, right? But I'm still touching it. So do we say the tefillah is a perfect tefillah? Is it that immediately after the tefillah, you're immediately coming again? Or do we say no, that a tefillah must be mitahen? if the tefillah is not mitaher, then it's not a good tefillah, then it's not a kosher tefillah at all. So that could be the discussion over here. That could be the makos that comes from the Rashbam. If you know that a tefillah is a good tefillah, it's just family coming again. So over here, once the tefillah is a good tefillah, I don't care that it's getting traced again. It's getting traced. It's not getting required for tefillah again. Right? So it doesn't bother me that there's traces in there. But if you hold that the tefillah, if it's not a perfect mitzvah, it's not going to work as a tefillah even, then you can understand if there's still traces in the kli, that the tefillah shouldn't be a valid tefillah. So that's a little bit along this in a very halachic shir. The Dublin Rebbe had a finish that this whole discussion was only when the tefillah wasn't used in the last 24 hours, was used within the last 24 hours, then anyway, it's not going to be a problem. Okay, so that's not so practical, because most of the time when we do tefillah kelim, it's a brand new kelim, they have no chafers, there's nothing to worry about. Chatzitza issues. So this is very important la halacha. A chatzitza, people make a mistake, they think that if you sit there for 3 hours with the nail polish remover, and there's still something, there's a little tiny bit of glue, you just can't get off. People think that's a chatzitza. 99% of the time it's not a chatzitza. The definition of chatzitza is as follows, as we're in this morning's daf. On a daraita level, it has to cover robe and something that you're mocked on. Meaning, you dip the kli in mud, that would then be a chatzitza to put it in the mikvah. Right? That would be chatzitza midaraita. On a daraita level, if it's either on most of the kli or you're mocked on it, but it's not on most of the kli, right? You're mocked, you don't want it there, like a tag normally you're mocked on. There's a sticker on the glass, you wouldn't use those glasses at your table with the sticker still on the glass. Right? So generally, you're mocked on that. That is a problem of chatzitza midrabanan. But when you scrub everything off, and there's this tiny bit of glue on the bottom side of a serving platter that no one would ever notice, and that you wouldn't hesitate for a second to use that at a meal to serve on your table, so that's not a chatzitza. That's a meal that they don't mock it. You just have to ask yourself, would I use this to serve when I have company? If I bring it to my table when I have company, similar to like you said, you ask a woman, when a woman calls it, if a woman, and I know this is mostly the child, but if a woman calls with a shayla and she says that there's some, she noticed after she goes to the mikvah, exactly this morning, that she notices a speck of nail polish on her finger, so the question you ask her is, would you go out of Central Avenue and shopping and carry on with your day, if you weren't Jewish, with this speck of nail polish on your finger? So if the answer is yes, it's a tiny little speck, no one would even notice it, then the tefillah is 100% fine, it's not a chafitza, because it's not makdim. The same exact halachas of the tefillah kelim and tefillah by an isha. That's in terms of preparing something for tefillah. Now the actual tefillah is a little tricky, because when you put a kli, you have, let's say, quartz, right, and you stick it into the mikvah, so the water has to get all around the quartz. So you can't, if you're holding on to it, your hand is covering part of the quartz, right, so it's a problem. So I don't know, I seem to remember long time ago, not seeing the baskets always by the mikvah. Now every mikvah, I think, has like a basket. They can just stick them into the basket. So if you just throw it into the basket, not, it's beautiful, it's wonderful. Sometimes you get to the mikvah, you're in a rush, someone else is using the basket. You don't want to make your kelim with their kelim. So what do you do? How do you solve a kelim without a basket? So if you put your hand in, so there's a major chatzitza. Your hand is chatzitza all around the kelim that you're sticking in. So this is a three-way machlok is supposed to know what to do. First of all, there's machlokas in the Mishnayos, whether you can hold it loosely, or you say, no, don't hold it loosely, because we're afraid that you're not going to hold it as loosely as you think you're holding it, and the water's not really going to get through. Now, the Ramah recommends that a person should wet their hands first. In that way, so when you stick the, your hands are wet, and you stick it, and you're holding the kli, so all the water is connected to each other, right, and that's all considered. Lift the water, and that way you'll be able to do the skills kelim. However, the Rama says, make sure you wet your hands in mikvah water, not in sink water. That's the which obviously you would do anyway. You're right by the mikvah. Why would you go to the sink to wet your hands? You're sticking your hands in the mikvah anyway. Taz holds even sink water is okay. Hashaka, that it connects. Tosfos mitzvahs, you can't get into right now. The Chiddush is, Rabbi Yonasan says, you can't just wet your hands in the mikvah water. What are you going to do? You stick your hands in the mikvah water, you wet it, take your hand out. Now, what kind of water is on your hand when you take your hand out? As soon as you take it out, it's no longer mitzvah water. It's only mitzvah water so long as it's connected to the mitzvah. Once you take it out, now it's regular water. You can't now, that water is not going to help you with your chatzitza issue when you stick the fork back in. So if you're in a crisis, what do you have to do? Take two hands. One with the cleave, put it in, both hands in the water and then transfer from one hand to the other. This way, your hand was wet before it received the flea, but your hand didn't come out of the water wet. It remained in the water. So if you can just keep that hand underwater and put it into the hand while it's underwater, that's the way to do the tefila. Is everyone conscious for the tefila snatches? No, but, you know, it's not that hard to be not really like the tefila snatches. You may as well. I mean, it's not that difficult to come with the key. So you're not going for the tefila snatches. As I mentioned before, the basket is perfectly fine. The Mishnayos and the Tevilos talk about how large a hole has to be in the kli in order for you to be allowed to depose something in that kli. And essentially, the way it comes out in the Mishnayos is that any time the kli would not be a usable kli to hold water, you're allowed to use it for tefillah kelim. So certainly those crates, you can't hold any water in them. That's perfectly fine for tefillah kelim. Something that a lot of people are not that careful about, that you do have to be careful about, is when you're tumbling cups, glasses, let's say, don't put them in upside down, because then the water's not getting in. So definitely a fine. Right? If you, the inside of the glass will remain dry, the water pocket will remain there, and the water won't get in. You have to put it sideways or right side up so that the sleeve will fill with water, make sure the water gets inside and outside, all pots, drinking glasses, things like that. Now the bracha on tefillah, there's a lot of people on the Zalman that are not careful with that. In the bracha on tefillah is like any other bracha mitzvah. There's no special halachos of bracha on tefillah kelim. But what's the halacha of any bracha mitzvah? Let's say one that we do every year, bedikas chametz. I make a bracha, so I start, if I talk before I start to do the bedikah, then do the bracha. I messed up, right? That certainly happens. Am I allowed to talk once I start to do the bedikah? No, I'm not allowed to talk until I finish the mitzvah. I have to wait until I finish the bedikah until I talk. If I did talk once I started, before I finished, I don't have to make a new bracha, but I'm not allowed to lechachila talk until I finish the bedikah. Right? That's where I love the bedikah from. It's by the shochet, when he's shechting 1,000 animals. He makes one bracha, shechts 1,000 animals, and then he can talk. He's not allowed to talk. In between all rest, the topic that he's talking about is related to the mitzvah that he's doing, right? You can always, that's never considered that you have to take it early to. So the same is with the canon. People go with 1,000 canons to tell them, shut off the cell phone, don't start conversations with other people. You have to make the bracha and do the tovling and not talk until all of the tovling is complete, unless it's something about the tefillah kelim itself, meaning, can you help me get the sticker off, or something that will aid in the tefillah kelim, then you're allowed to do it. Let's say you forgot to make the bracha, or you thought glass, let's say you thought glass doesn't require a bracha. You see someone else in the mitzvah thought glass doesn't require a bracha. They stick the kli in, and they did the tefillah, and they say, what about the bracha? And they realize, whoops, I didn't know. So can they still make the bracha? So once the tefillah is done, it's too late to make the bracha. If they still have more, they're going to be trouble. Obviously, they can't make the bracha. But there's a subject in the poskim whether the tefillah is metaher while it's underwater or once it comes out of the water. So it's actually subject in the poskim. If you catch someone with the glass underwater, is it still, they still have time over Lach Yachan to be able to make the bracha. Some of the brachas probably shouldn't make the bracha in such a case, because there's certainly room to assume that they can't make the bracha. And just in the last minute, one last halakha, and that is in terms of who can do the tefillah, we discussed very briefly last week, a child is allowed to do tefillah, but he's not believed that he did it, and the same with a gun. Meaning the caterer is going to do tefillah, very often they'll bring a couple of the Jewish workers to do it with them, as long as there's a Jew there watching it, that sees that it happens. Because even if a plea falls into the mitzvah, that's a perfectly fine tefillah, it's just that there's no ne'amanus on behalf of the child or the guy that they actually did the tefillah. If a guy is doing the tefillah with you, you should make sure you do something so that you can make a bracha, because the guy can't be making the bracha on the tefillah kelim, and the bracha should be made ideally, so when you have a guy doing tefillah along with the Jew should at least be told something so that he can make a bracha. I think we covered most of the bases in the Tefillah Kelim, and let's start with a different topic.